As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Total Soccer Show and our latest Champions League review in news that will shock absolutely no one. Bayern, PSG, Real Madrid and Man City are all through to the quarterfinals. But how did they do it? Let's talk about it. My name's Ryan Bailey. Joining me to discuss the continental action, returning champion Taylor Rockwell. Hello, Taylor.
Hello, Ryan. Who'd have thunk these plucky underdogs could find a way through? Shock of all shocks.
I can hardly believe it. Can you hear my trepidation and excitement in the tone of my voice, Taylor? It's incredible. Yeah.
I love that you were the one who was like, let's make sure we start this with energy and enthusiasm, and then you brought that crashing right back down.
I think I said it was energy. I said the predictability was in an energy-filled way.
If I want to be positive, if I want to start the show on a positive note, Ryan, can I just say, I like the glasses. I noticed them on Monday. I was a fan of them on Monday. They continue to be present. I feel like they give you a sharp look. I'm enjoying them. Similar to Jamie Carragher rocking glasses. It's a good look.
That's kind of you to say, Taylor. They also give my screen a sharper look when I'm looking at it. So that's great to hear. Also joining us, Taylor, Mr. Graham Ruthven's here. Hello, Graham.
Hello, Ryan. How are you? Any new stamps for your collection since we spoke yesterday? I'm still reeling from this revelation. And also your proof on the Patreon of your collection. Sensational seems. Did the stamp collection come with the glasses?
They're intrinsically related, I think, Graham, frankly. Patreon.com/TotalSoccerShow if you'd like access to my stamp collection now, because that was forced out of me.
What a trailer.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and mute myself. I'll be back in a couple minutes, fellas.
All the predictable teams are through and you can look at some stamps. That's the headlines on today's Total Soccer Show episode.
Anyone would think we've run out of ideas.
Joe Lowry also joining us. Hi, Joe.
Hey guys, I'm just over here while Taylor's looking at stamps. I'm looking at the Wikipedia link that Graham sent in our Slack about the village that he grew up in. I'm learning about Roman ruins and all sorts of other fun things. Graham, this is delightful.
Yeah, the school that I went to, true story, there was a Roman hospital underneath it and they dug it up when I was at that school. Totally true. And they filmed Monty Python at Duncastle.
Did they give you a shovel? Say, get in, we're digging?
Yes, it's essentially slave labor. Right. Yeah, we were part of the dig.
Love wow, it. which Monty Python, Life of Brian? Or,
the Holy Grail.
Yeah, the Holy Grail would make much more sense, yeah.
Yeah.
Rather than the one in the desert. Yeah.
Very yeah.
All right, patreon.com/TotalSoccerShow. Once again, if you'd like to support our show, bonus episodes, bonus videos, access to our Discord where all the cool kids are hanging out. One of our latest episodes going up today, Best Match Day Experiences. Plenty of good stuff in there. Yeah. You know what makes for a poor match day experience, Joe? I found playing your game in a Californian swimming pool, which appears to be what the USWNT are doing at the moment.
That game was unbelievable last night. The pitch at Snapdragon Stadium in San Diego was completely waterlogged. The first goal that the U.S. scored, they win this game, by the way, to eliminate any questions about that. They win it in penalties. To get on the board, Canada had a back pass deep inside their own half, and the defender passes it back, and the ball just stops dead, and Jaden Shaw pounces on it and scores. Like, this was not a real soccer game. This was a schoolyard chaos ball match. The best thing, and I think maybe the only thing we can take away, and this is intangible, so maybe we don't even know about this, but the win came in penalties, and that feels cathartic to me, because not only did Alyssa Nair get involved in goal, She also took and scored the U.S.'s penalty, like a penalty for the U.S. I think it was the third overall penalty and the second one that found the back of the net. Really well taken. Like, maybe this gets some of those demons off the U.S.'s back.
Joe, which situation was worse? The situation at Snapdragon or the one between RSL and LAFC?
Wow.
I think last night was worse. The way
more
that
dangerous.
The ball isn't... Yeah, it's more dangerous. Yeah. I cannot believe... I mean, I only saw the highlights, but that game wasn't stopped at any point, right? They just continued that,
I could
that match.
Not, I actually did not think we would get a game within like 4 days of the RSL-LAFC game that would be as bad or worse, but this one totally was. Yeah, the ball didn't move right. Like, it's one of those games that you can't learn anything about your team outside of maybe a penalty kick shootout where the ball is like stationary and it's a set sort of routine. Like, we didn't learn really anything about the U.S. in this match. The good thing is they've got a game against Brazil, who are the best team in South America, like probably the next best team after the U.S. Not that the U.S. have been great in this competition, to be frank, but probably the best team after the U.S. at the Gold Cup. And so having a chance to take on Brazil in a final in a tournament that teams seem to care about, there's been some good intensity in this competition. Having that game on Sunday evening, I think, is the perfect opponent for the U.S. to finish this thing off.
Well, all I can say, Joe, is we wouldn't allow any of this dangerous or snowy conditions on the East Coast. We're much more civilized over here in this time zone. That's all I've got to say about that matter.
Sure.
Let's talk about some European action which took place on actual grass. Why don't we go to Bavaria, where Bayern Munich had a 3-0 win over Lazio, going through 3-1 on aggregate. Lazio had their first leg lead overturned rather emphatically. Harry Kane with a brace. And Tommy Muller getting in on the action here. Where do we start, Graham? Good performance from Bayern that shows that they're still quite good despite what's happening domestically?
Can I jump in before Graham answers to say, no. Ryan, I think your hesitation in how to begin is the place to begin because it's so confusing. I think Joe has notes on this as well, that when you've got like Bayern in free fall with Thomas Tuchel like leaving at the end of the season and like, oh, maybe that's the end of it. Now suddenly they're destroying their opponents and everything seems all is right with the world. Graham, make it make sense, please.
I'm not sure that I can, to be honest. Sorry to disappoint. But in terms of this match, I think in the end, this was a strong response by Bayern Munich. Although for 38 minutes before the first goal, I wasn't entirely sure it was going to pan out this way. It wasn't fantastic from Bayern for a lot of the first half. I thought Lazio were carrying a threat on the quick counter-attack. I thought it was pretty laboured from Bayern in possession play. Lazio, they were clogging up the middle of the pitch to make it difficult for Bayern to play through them. And it worked relatively well for a good period. I thought Sané was having a really ineffective match. And at that point, it was a slog for Bayern. But then there was a real sliding doors moment in that first half when Ciro Immobile heads a pretty decent chance wide from a deflected cross. Now, it is deflected and it comes quickly to him and the angle's tight. But nonetheless, we're talking about a supposedly an elite level striker here.
Graham, can we
and
call
then,
that Haalanding the ball?
No,
no
way.
The Haaland one is much worse. The Haaland one is much, much worse. There was a challenge aspect to this one. But nonetheless, it's a good opportunity. And then a minute after that, Bayern had scored through Harry Kane. And the dynamic of the match seemed to shift completely after that. It felt like Bayern were able to take control of things. They were, by the end, good value for the 3-0 win. I thought some key players performing well. Tommy Muller, Harry Kane. I thought Leon Goretzka had a good game in central midfield. First time in a while that I've been able to say that about him. So yeah, I cannot complain about Bayern Munich making it into the quarterfinals. They were well worth that result.
Yeah, they were the better team, not just in this game, but on the whole across both legs. You know, I think the first one was pretty even, but Bayern were better enough to sort of overcome some of those early challenges. The thing I liked about Bayern in this match is that a lot of the things we talked about from the Lazio defeat, from the Bayer Leverkusen defeat, a lot of those things looked like they weren't problems anymore, or at least not as big of problems as they were in those couple of high-profile losses. So the big thing, and I copied in some of my notes from the first leg into my notes for the second leg so that I would remember the framework here. The big issue that we talked about on the show in the first leg for Bayern in this tie was that there wasn't enough movement off the ball, right? Harry Kane would drop in and no one would fill his spot, right? The wingers wouldn't crash and fill, the 10 wouldn't crash and fill. There wasn't any of that stuff. In this game, there was. You know, the players around Harry Kane as he drops in were going and filling his spot in the front line. There was clearer and sharper off-ball movement in this match. And Bayern, because of it, you know, they didn't maybe look like world beaters in the first 30 minutes or so. I think it took him a little bit to get into this game, Graham. I think that point is correct. But they were creating chances in a way that it feels like we haven't seen a Bayern Munich team create chances in quite some time. There's a moment, it's not a goal, but there's a moment in the 50th minute that really stood out to me specifically for that Kane pattern of play. Harry Kane's always going to drop to get on the ball. He's fantastic when his foot is on the ball. So it makes sense. You want that in your team. 50th minute, Kane drops in to get on the end of a pass from Leon Goretzka. And then Kane turns and plays a nice little lofted diagonal out to Joshua Kimmich on that right side. He's playing right back in this game. And then immediately, as Kane is dropping in and the play develops, Leroy Sané makes that run and goes and fills the nine spot and crashes the box. And at the back post, or at least the weak side of the box, Thomas Müller goes and crashes. It was almost like, and maybe this is what happened, it's hard to know without being inside the dressing room, it's almost like this was the key point of emphasis ahead of this game of, hey, when Harry drops, we have to fill that space. Kimmich in this moment plays the cross into the box, and nothing comes of it, but there are numbers there, and there weren't numbers in those key areas, seemingly, at any point in that first leg against Lazio. So this Bayern team and the Bayern performance was far better in this match.
Yeah.
And Taylor, to quickly address the sort of weirdness about Bayern right now, yeah, they look really bad in moments, and they are sort of in free fall, and Thomas Tuchel is going, and so it's hard to read too much into the future of this club right now based off of a result like this. What I will say is Bayern's talent threshold is so high that their ability to come back from how bad they've been is also really, really high. I'm not saying this team is fixed because of this result, but when you have this much talent in your team, like, yeah, you can have a really terrible run of form. Suddenly, if one or two things switch and all of a sudden you're feeling yourselves again, like, okay, now all of a sudden you are a dominant force. Now you are three goals better than a very solid Serie A team. So I don't even think it's that confusing, to be honest. This is just the power of really, really good talent coming together in the right moment. Whether it will continue to come together is a completely different question.
My very useful analysis of what Joe just said is to add that every show, every other show, Joe has a word or phrase that I can't tell is like an advanced stat or is a thing that Joe has just made up. And talent threshold is now one of those phrases that I'm like, is that like, is that a thing where you look at the combined talent stats of every single player and add it together and that's the threshold that they should be meeting? Yeah, I don't know, Joe, but I like it.
It's like potential in FIFA. That's the one FIFA stat that I think really matters and I trust.
Yeah. Joe's over here raising the TSS talent threshold. That's all I know.
Correct.
That's all I know.
From zero between the three of us.
From a negative. Taylor, how surprised would you be if Bayern Munich go deep in this competition? Nay, I say, get all the way to the final, based on maybe this being a catalyst for a turnaround in their season?
Well, to go ahead and coin a phrase, their talent threshold is very, very high. So I think with that in mind, I wouldn't be that surprised because they do have the experience and the ability to back it up. They have maybe just a little bit of freedom to listen to Thomas Tuchel knowing that he won't be there anymore. Maybe there's less resentment for him and more of a like, okay, now that you're out of here, maybe I'll listen to the substitute teacher a little bit more than I would have otherwise. But they also have very good individuals. They still have some of the problem areas that we've seen in games past and some players who could come back in, cough, cough, Dio Upamecano, who's always potentially going to cause a problem. But in this game, for how frustrated they could have been and how much this could have turned into the crowd going against them, the board being there and looking very unhappy, and then they could have gotten to halftime and it been 0-0, or maybe it's the 60th minute and it's still nil, and now the frustration ramps up. It did feel like they had proactive solutions, as Joe laid out, and it felt like they worked pretty effectively. I also think when you have Harry Kane, who can just do Harry Kane things from time to time, you're always in a good position. Joe talked about how he links play. I thought this was a definitive Harry Kane performance. When people wonder what makes him so special or what it is that makes him elite, it's the ability to do so many different things so well, but it's also just how good he is at finishing, which is not, you know, breaking new ground stating that one, but his goals in this game, it's just they look so simple and they require so much ability to know exactly how to get into the right position, how to get your head on it, how to throw yourself
in front
of the defender. But even the second goal for me, the way he adjusts his stride as he's crashing goal to make sure that he's able to instep the ball with his left foot. Like, you guys brought up the Haaland miss earlier, and it's like, I'm not trying to criticize Haaland. I'm just pointing out that like he's not able to get his body right the way he needs to in that moment to get some part of it the way he wants to put it on frame. Harry Kane, you can see him awkwardly, very awkwardly shuffle his steps, but it allows him to take it with his left instep and just pass it in. I think a forward who's maybe not on their game, let's say somebody like maybe like just randomly Luis Openda, for example, maybe doesn't put himself in the best possible shooting position and maybe puts that wide or puts that over. Harry Kane in this game, I thought, was just so consistent and so calm in front of goal.
With the first goal, I accept all that, Taylor. With the first goal, though, it's the instant recognition of the fact that Guerrero has kind of scuffed the shot and where the ball is going to... It's like the Ralph Wiggum gif of him throwing himself through the window to get on the end of that cross to head it in. And I think that's just one of the things that... Obviously, Harry Kane is an excellent all-rounder with his passing range and everything, but it's a differentiator, right? That's the thing that separates out the elite from the rest. Talking about elite-level attackers... It was good to see Thomas Müller back to being Thomas Müller, wasn't it? The second Bayern goal is such, it's the second goal is classic Müller, where he just has an incredible feel for knowing where space is inside the box. How many times have we seen that sort of finish from him over the years? And it actually wasn't obvious in real time that it was a Thomas Müller goal. I don't know what the camera angle was like on CBS, but the way the camera was positioned, it looked like De Ligt, who I also confused for Eric Dier initially, so this was a very confusing goal to watch first time. It looked like his volley had gone straight in, but it was a very deliberate and necessary header from Müller. Yeah. And then for the first Bayern goal as well, it's a superb run from Müller to stretch the Lazio back line. That's not something that they did in the first leg of the tie. Yes, the header is sort of just back into space, but again, Müller knows the value of getting the ball into certain areas, and it's Guerrero who latches onto it. So he's been obviously so influential for Bayern for so long, and he's still making the difference in big matches like this one. I get the sense we are coming to the end of his top level career now, but this was a very enjoyable swan song from him.
For people who are new to the show or have forgotten, we came up with the term a long time ago, or the phrase a long time ago, the Müller hello, which is the opposite of an Irish goodbye. The Irish goodbye being when you just depart a party or whatever without saying goodbye. You just kind of fade out and away you go. The Müller hello is when you just show up in a random spot without anyone seeing it happening and somehow you manage to contribute to a goal. This might be the definitive Müller hello. Yeah. That, like, even the commentator until the very last replay was like, what a great shot from De Ligt. It's an incredible volley. The way he... Oh, Müller's there. Oh, Müller got it. Oh, it's a Thomas Müller goal. Like, that's such a perfect encapsulation of Thomas Müller at the same time.
I always have to Google his age when we talk about him. 34 still. He could be 24 and I still believe you, frankly.
Yep. That's younger than I thought. He might still have a few years left in him. We might get a few more Müller hellos.
There you go. Another decade is what I'm campaigning for. Graham, I'm sure you're excited that it is 99 days as we record until Euro 2024. And
indeed,
you're very excited that Harry Kane is primed for that tournament to maybe not win a trophy again.
I'm excited for Harry Kane as a Bayern Munich player to win the Champions League at Wembley. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, that's a thing that could happen.
Is it going to happen, Greg? Probably not. But I can't rule out Bayern. I mean, here's an omen, right? Thomas Tuchel, before this game, he broke his toe. He came in the post-match press conference, he said he broke his toe before this game. The last time Thomas Tuchel was on crutches, Champions League final, when Chelsea won it under him. So maybe he has recognised that, and he's trying to... Maybe that's like a deliberate ploy from him. But if it was an accidental, then that's a good omen.
Do you need crutches for a broken toe? Does it depend on the toe? How does that work?
2.5 months out, he's not going to have crutches for a broken toe.
He'll get to the semis, just not to the final.
Personal choice.
Personal choice, indeed. All right, that was Bayern Munich's victory, putting them through to the quarterfinals. We take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk Paris Saint-Germain. Back shortly.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back to our Champions League review. We go now to Spain, where Real Sociedad were defeated 2-1 by Paris Saint-Germain. PSG going through 4-1 on aggregate. The Mbappe story in Paris isn't over yet. A brace for Kylian and a great performance to boot. It shows what he's capable of, Graham, if you don't bench him. Not an easy place to visit, Real, as well. How do we feel about PSG here?
I thought this was a very impressive performance by PSG on the whole. Yes, there was the late rally from La Real, a lot of L's and R's in that sentence. But other than that, PSG were in control of this match. And then when you add in Kylian Mbappe, there was nothing that Real Sociedad could do to avoid losing this one. I thought Lucho's setup was really interesting because it's not something, look, I don't watch every PSG game, but it's not something I can recall seeing from him as PSG manager. So it was either Usman Dembele as a 10 or a false 9, depending on who you spoke to. But he was certainly playing in a central position. And then you had Barcola and Mbappe as the split forwards and a midfield diamond beneath them. And I thought it worked really well. It gave Mbappe that space to get on his bike as he likes to. It gave Dembele a bit of freedom. La Real really struggled to pick him up. But maybe the most important thing was it gave PSG control of the ball, but also those passing routes that they need to get the most out of, primarily Kylian Mbappe. So this season, we've seen them struggle between the two extremes of what they are constructed to do as a team, which is maybe to play more in the break, quick transition football, and then what Lucho wants to do, which is very, very heavy possession-orientated football. This allows them to kind of do both. It allows them to get the best of both worlds, and so I will be surprised if we don't see this tactical setup again from PSG in the Champions League, because, yeah, I thought it worked really well.
I completely agree, Graham, and I think back to the first leg again because there's so much continuity between these two teams getting games together so close to each other. Dembele was the one who helped break through Sociedad's press to begin with, right? He was playing on the right side in that game, dropping deep, dealing with a guy on his back, turning through midfield and driving forward. When you think about this PSG team, or at least when I think about them, I won't speak for anybody else, I don't think of Ousmane Dembele being the obvious one to drop in and play that number 10 role.
I've never seen him play that role before.
Never. I've watched him for years with Dortmund, with Barcelona, now for PSG. I've never seen this happen before. He is a winger. Like, he is a very, very good winger when he's healthy and surrounded by the right pieces. But he's not a deep-lying playmaker. He's not at any of that stuff. Like, he's not a pure number 10. He's a dribbler first and foremost. But because of that, given how aggressive Real Sociedad press, having someone who's so comfortable on the ball to drive through and past opposing defenders makes a lot of sense. So I was surprised when I saw the lineup. I was surprised in the early stages. And then I started remembering how key Dembele was on that right side. I started remembering how good he is on the ball, even though it's not in the usual spots where he's getting touches. There was a lot of validity to this tactical decision. Not that it was without risk. It very much was not. This is a risky thing for Luis Enrique to do. It would have been much simpler to have, I don't know, Zaire Emery or Vitinha be the one carrying the ball forward out of midfield. But Dembele was so good at that stuff. Consistently, he would drop in from his number 10 spot. He would draw defenders, or midfielders, I should say, from Real Sociedad with him because they were fairly man-oriented in how they pressed in different parts of the field, Sociedad. And so when Dembele drops, someone's coming with him. And when the rest of PSG's midfielders drop, or at least a lot of them do, they're drawing Sociedad's line of midfield forward towards PSG's own goal and then dropping a pass in behind. And we saw this on key moments. We saw this in goal sequences. Like, they went to this pattern over and over and over again. And Dembele, credit to him and credit to Enrique, because this tactical decision worked really well. I'm not sure, Graham, I'm not as sure as you are, that this is something we're going to see on repeat. This feels very game-specific to me. But selfishly, I want to see it again because it was really, really fun.
Yeah. Taylor, you buying what Lucho was selling here?
Very much so. I feel like there were moments in this game when especially when PSG possess out of the back and do so very calmly, but kind of pull Sociedad forward or La Real forward and then are able to find a way through that, then they do have those kind of big gaps to attack into. And in a lot of ways, this to me felt like the kind of perfect combination of what Mbappe wants to be and how he wants his team to play with what Lucho wants his team to be and how he wants them to play. I thought it was incredibly impressive, maybe the best I've seen PSG look in a good long while. And I should also say, I think on the Patreon, I was pretty critical of Mbappe, a lot of it being for his kind of off-field antics and a lot of the will he, won't he be staying or leaving. But this game was just a reminder of how exceptionally good he is. Both of these goals are so well taken. The first one with the double pump fake that somehow pulls the defender out twice and then he just finishes emphatically. The second one, the way he's able to fully open his hips up at full speed and then pass it into the near post is It's just a thing that not many people can do. It's what makes him exceptional. It's not just the speed. It's how he's able to then adjust his body and still have control and still shoot at full speed, or at least at a speed that is full speed for most other players. I think combining what he does best with how Lucho wants to play, or how he wants this team to play to get the best out of them, makes them reach another level.
The scary thing about the second goal that Mbappe scores, Taylor, is he actually times his run wrong. He has to stagger. I don't know if anyone has seen this in the replay, but he has to stagger it and kind of like stop and start again. He goes a little bit too early when it's played in behind. But once he gets into that space, there's nobody that can stop him. So he doesn't, most players need to time that run perfectly for them to get in behind. He doesn't. He can make a mistake and still get into that space. And yeah, the way that he shapes to shoot into the far corner, but then drags it into the near corner. That's a finish that Mbappe likes. And his finish for the first goal broke the net. It literally broke the net. They had to stop the match for a few minutes to kind of tie it back together to the post. So yeah, very, very impressive in this match, as we've become accustomed to see from Mbappe. And I guess the irony is, this setup, this performance from PSG, it's really the first time that we've already kind of covered this point, but it's the first time that I've seen Lucho's approach really get the best out of Mbappe. It seems like a good fit. And the irony is that just as PSG might have a coherent structure and a vision and a team that can give Mbappe a real platform, he's going to leave them at the end of the season to join a team that don't have an obvious place for him because they've got this Vinicius Junior guy.
If you're Luis Enrique, though, there are moments in this game. There's one of the first half, I think it was in like the 40th minute, when they play out like I was talking about. And the way he just applauds emphatically is definitely his personality. But it has to feel so good as a manager when all you've tried to do is drill on how we want to possess, how we want to move the ball, how we want to pull the opponent forward and pull them out of position and use the ball to do so. And to see your team do it and do it so effectively, like it's when he just starts applauding over his head and like spinning in circles. It was a nice little like seal trick moment for him, but also a reminder that he is a very good manager at the core.
Joe, obviously all the pieces fell into place for Lucho in this game. Do you have thoughts on how this team copes without Mbappe next season and beyond? Is there still the framework for success, do we think, at this level?
I mean, in terms of success being in the Champions League, it's going to be a big hit, right? You lose Kylian Mbappe, who's one of the two or three best players in the world right now. You can't replace him with any other singular force that's not Erling Haaland, and I don't think Erling Haaland is moving from one oil state club to another. Like, it's going to be a big hit. They're still going to walk Ligue 1 because there's so much talent in this team, and they will reinforce in the transfer market with likely a couple of players who will try to absorb some of the goal hit that you're losing with Mbappe. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be a big hit. There is potential. Like, we sort of thought this was going to happen when Messi left the club and the club was going to get a bit more balanced. There's potential that maybe it still needs more balance and maybe you need a little bit more. I don't really buy that. If you can't build a really cohesive team around an elite player, and Mbappe is without a doubt the one elite player who's fit and available in this team, if you can't build a team that's like a Champions League favorite or co-favorite with Man City with their robot, like I don't know that you're going to be better without that player than you were before. So there are real challenges here, and I think when he leaves, PSG are going to have a lot of reckoning and self-reflection to do about how they develop and how they push towards the ultimate goal of this project, which has taken forever and is still to win the Champions League.
Yeah, still to win the Champions League. We shall see if that one pans out this season, although more than likely when the draw's done on March 15th, they're going to get Real Madrid and it's going to be over there. That just feels like it's going to happen. Why don't we talk about Real Madrid, in fact? They had a 1-1 draw against RB Leipzig, going through 2-1 on aggregate. Vinicius and Willy Urban with the goals in this one. What did we make, Tata, of this performance from Real Madrid?
This was about what I expected. I think I said after the last round that it felt like this fixture was done. It wasn't quite as done as I thought it would be, but I thought Real Madrid have been mostly Real Madrid in this competition. And I think Leipzig have continued to be what I've seen from Leipzig this season. Maybe I'm just watching the wrong games from them, but this has felt like every single Leipzig game I've seen, where they get opportunities, they play really electric, fun football at both ends of the pitch, and then they can't score, or they don't take their chances, or the chances they do go for are low percentage or from strange angles, or it just doesn't come off. It feels like that has been them time and time again, at least in the second half of the season, and this felt like more of the same. I wouldn't say that this was a performance that made me think Real Madrid will definitely win the Champions League, are definitely back, have got it all figured out, but It is another game in which Carlo Ancelotti makes proactive changes at half times and makes the team better than they were performing in the second half, and they end up getting the result. So I think it's a good enough performance from Real Madrid, but I think it was another sort of frustrating one for Leipzig, who had multiple opportunities to get some goals in this.
I think... go ahead, Graham. You go.
I'll fight you both. Let's do it.
I was just going to say, I think I differ slightly. So RB Leipzig certainly had opportunities. I thought Real Madrid got away with one here. We said something similar to that effect after the first leg. I thought this was a worse performance than
every game Real Madrid play in ever.
Well, maybe in the Champions League. In La Liga, they have been, not so much recently, but they've been pretty much dominant in La Liga this season. But yes, it's a trend in the Champions League for Real Madrid. But I thought this was a poorer performance than the first leg. I thought Leipzig were certainly the more proactive team. They really tested Real Madrid. Again, the lack of finishing, the lack of cutting edge, you outlined that, Taylor. In the first leg, it was Benjamin Sesko who spurned a good number of opportunities. In the second leg, Luis Openda didn't bring his shooting boots. Although I would say, Sesko had the best chance of the match, both with the eye test and on expected goals in the first 10 minutes when he kind of shoots straight at Andre Lunin. I'm not convinced Ancelotti got his setup right in the first half. He went with five midfielders and Vinicius as the only out-and-out attacker. And then I guess the idea was that Bellingham and Valverde would get forward from there, but it was five midfielders. And I think that was out of respect to Leipzig and the performance they produced in the first leg when they gave Real Madrid issues on the break and in transition. I don't think it worked because Leipzig had joy in this area once again. So I don't think that tactic worked from Ancelotti. I didn't really understand why they were so passive in that first half. I thought it was low energy. They didn't really seem to have an idea of how they were meant to be attacking. When the halftime whistle goes, the Bernabeu is loudly whistling. And I know I'm not taking the Bernabeu home crowd as a gauge of what is good and bad, but the last attack of the first half, Real Madrid have the ball wide. The only two players forward for them in the box are Danny Carvajal and Antonio Rudiger. So I think that was illustrative of elite. When they had the ball and they were going forward, they didn't really seem to know what this shape and approach was meant to do. I think it was pretty muddled in the first half.
So I think you guys are kind of saying the same thing, just framing it differently, right? I think we would all agree that Leipzig didn't finish their chances. I don't think the timing of some of those shots in the final third, they were either rushed or the final pass is a little bit off. We saw that from Xavi Simons in the first half on that ball to Openda. Like, it just wasn't quite there for Leipzig in the final third. Where I lean towards Graham's framing rather than Taylor's is that, Taylor, I think we can't discount how impressive it is to be this much toe-to-toe with Real Madrid if you're RB Leipzig. Like, this isn't them against a mid-table Bundesliga team. This is them against the team that's going to win the title in La Liga and who are the second favorites in this competition behind Manchester City. Like, this is a real team. Even with a lineup that I agree, Graham, didn't seem to gel very well for Real Madrid, I don't think anybody in Madrid is worried about that at all, because we have seen this from Real Madrid over and over and over again, and they just keep on winning in the Champions League. But to go out there and be relatively solid defensively, to create more chances and better chances against Real Madrid is incredibly impressive. The thing that stings for Leipzig is that none of that matters. You lost, you had a real chance to advance here. And Taylor, this is where I see where you're coming from, even though I'm inclined to be more charitable to RB Leipzig. It's like, you had it there, and you've had it there a number of times this season, and it's just not happening. And likely this attacking foursome, who were good at creating chances in this match, Simons and Dani Olmo and the two strikers that we mentioned, Openda and Benjamin Sesko, like, that group's not going to be together again next year. I'd be shocked if all four of those players are back for Leipzig next season. So this was your window with this group, and you sort of closed it on yourself.
I went back and checked, like, of the games that I've watched from them in the last 2 months, I have three different times I have a note that is approximating Leipzig the better team, but couldn't get their finishing right. Couldn't finish on the day, couldn't get the goals when they needed them to. So I hear what you're both saying, and I think there is validity in what you're saying, especially when it comes to the Leipzig lack of finishing. This was their chance, but also, you know, they did go toe-to-toe with Madrid. Graham, a question for you with some of your criticism of the way they set up in that sort of 4-5-1 of sorts. Like, this is a genuine question. I promise I'm not trying to, like, sandbag you. But if the idea of doing that was basically, we'll sit deep, we'll invite Leipzig onto us, we won't play into, like, the high, like, turnovers in transition, and then we're giving them opportunities to counter the counter. If you are basically doing that with the idea that then Jude Bellingham and Vinicius Jr. will spring forward on a counterattack and score a goal, like, that is how they score a goal in this game. Is there not an argument that sort of worked?
Yeah, well, this is the paradox with Real Madrid. How many times have we said this about Real Madrid, where a moment of individual quality makes the difference for them? I think there's a difference between the first and the second half, where Real Madrid, it was almost like they gave more space to Vinicius and Bellingham in the second half. I think they almost went a little bit deeper, and that closed up the space between the defensive line and the midfield line, which is where Leipzig were having a lot of joy with Olmo and Cesco and who's the other one? Openda, of course. And so that kind of contributes to the goal for Real Madrid, which is an interception from Kroos on the edge of the box. I think he does really well to then pass it on to Bellingham, who, by the way, the play from the execution from Jude Bellingham was incredible. The way that he waits for Vinicius to make that run into a central area, I think a lesser player would have played that ball out to Vinicius when he's out on the left wing, but he knows the movement he's going to wait. And there's just that split second of delay as well. Even when he makes that movement to play this perfectly weighted pass into Vinicius, I thought it was an excellent, excellent counter-attack. But my point with Real Madrid is just generally, we've seen this so many times from them before, there is certainly a trend from them in the Champions League. But when you are this passive, as they certainly were in the first half, you are taking a massive risk that the other team is not going to be able to capitalise, because all it takes is Benjamin Sesko to stick that one in the top corner. And yeah, maybe that takes an exceptional finish, maybe someone needs to overperform their expected goals, but that happens at the top level. All it takes is for Openda to stick one in the bottom corner, and all of a sudden Real Madrid are in trouble. So yeah, the line I keep coming back to is I thought they got away with one here. They will need to improve against, I know this is par for the course for Real Madrid, but they'll need to be better against higher caliber teams in the next round.
That makes sense. That really does. Both of you have, I think, laid it out really well, Joe, yourself as well, that, like, I think where I get tripped up is you saying, like, Real Madrid got away with one as though Leipzig were, like, significantly superior, and I think that's not quite what you're saying. And so no. I think I'm just hearing it wrong. It's more so basically like Leipzig could have won this one, but didn't because they themselves weren't particularly efficient. Real Madrid, not particularly great either, but they end up winning. And that feels like what they do. I also think it could have been a very different result if Vinicius got the red card that he probably deserved, if we want to talk about that one for a moment, because he gets into it with it's not Danny Olmo, it's Willy Orban. There we go. Basically has afters where Orban has passed the ball, Vinicius clatters into him. That could have been, and I think was, the yellow card. But then there's sort of a verbal back and forth. Vinicius shoves him in like the kind of upper chest neck region, I think, and that easily could have been a red card and wasn't. Danny Carvajal could have gotten a red card in the first leg of this one. So no. Madrid also somewhat
he's
fortunate
a liability,
with the way
Carvajal.
This is getting officiated as well.
Yeah, Real Madrid need to replace Carvajal in the summer. I expect that they will. There's a little bit of speculation around Hakimi, but Carvajal's making a lot of mistakes at the moment. There were at least two occasions in this match where he's very, very loose in the ball in his own half. He made a bad back pass against Valencia at the weekend, which led to a goal. So yeah, he is becoming a bit of a liability for this team.
I did enjoy some of the rhetoric around this one being that, like, Madrid always gets such favorable officiating that, like, in the league, in the Champions League, they always get, you know, a ref who's on their side. And I think this was also, as I was seeing the other headlines simultaneously of Jude Bellingham's suspension being upheld for the red card from this past weekend, it just felt a little bit incongruous for me that those two things were being discussed simultaneously.
You say that Real Madrid fans haven't been rational when they've implied that the referees rule against them. Is that what you're suggesting?
Who do we think are the most rational fans of any club? I'm not sure that exists. I think they're all a little bit delusional.
No, we're all
at
nuts.
Times. Yeah,
yes,
exactly.
That's inherent in the game. That's fair. Graham, one more time to revisit this got away with one narrative. Are we suggesting that's been a theme in this season's Champions League where, to my knowledge, they won all their group games and got through this round?
A theme with Real Madrid?
Yeah.
Or with general teams?
Real Madrid.
No, I think generally they're good value for their place in the quarterfinals, okay. But maybe not in this match.
Wait, but like this is, it's not like that's an unfair storyline to bring up, right? You know, sure. Real Madrid have been good in the Champions League. This is a team that somehow manages to continue progressing, both in terms of the league title race seemingly every single year, and also in like these inter-country cups. Like this is just their thing and has been for a really long time.
Does that bother you because it's slightly vibesy, Joe?
Yeah, I hate it. But I've learned years ago, just to stop doubting. At least with this group of players, I just kept looking stupid time and time again because I would say, you know, Real Madrid, the numbers aren't there. Like their build up play is poor. It doesn't have good structure. Their press continues to be and is this year, by the way. And if there is something that's going to undo them, it will be that their press is abysmal. Like they cannot press with this group of players. there's a lot of flaws here, but they just never seem to matter.
The vibes are strong.
The vibes are so strong, and they're stronger than the flaws, and I'm here for it now.
There indeed. Converted. Talent threshold and vibes very high at the Bernabeu right now. Let's take a quick break where there's we're going to talk about another team with a high talent threshold, Man City, who are also through. Back shortly.
Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick-and-mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth, and with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day-to-day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Total Soccer Show, we are reviewing the Champions League action from this week. Manchester City with a 3-1 win over Copenhagen. Akanji, Alvarez and Haaland with the goals for City. Graham, the BBC report, and I quote, the perfect warm-up for Sunday's crucial Premier League trip to Liverpool. Now, I of course, the Liverpool game, biggest game of the Premier League so far, this coming this Sunday, but to call a Champions League round of 16 second leg a warm-up for a Premier League game is, I don't know.
British coverage devalues everything that's not British soccer. There's a shock.
Yeah. Do you disagree with that though, Ryan? Because that's kind of what this was. Yeah. Like this tie was already a foregone conclusion after the first leg, and the second leg just highlighted the gulf in quality between these two teams. I mean, I guess Copenhagen will be relieved they weren't absolutely smashed, as so many teams have been at the Etihad in recent times. But yeah, City cruised through the majority of this one, especially after taking control of things early on through the Kanji and Alvarez goals in the first 10 minutes. They were able to rest De Bruyne, Foden, Kyle Walker. I think Rodri comes off at half-time. I think, yeah, he does. He comes off at half-time. Warm-up does kind of describe what this match was for City, I guess.
Yeah, so I guess my question, Graham, for this game is, did we learn anything?
No. No, I don't think we learned anything at all.
Cool. Anyone?
Well, does anyone disagree with that? I mean, this was completely part of the course.
Complete agreement with you, Graham.
Graham is the only person who has notes for this game in the document. I think that shows where we are, which is like, it is the not frustrating thing. It's just the reality of talking about Man City. We've talked about this before. They're just so comprehensively good that sometimes I feel like we don't end up talking about them all that much or giving them probably the credit they deserve, because it's just like, oh yeah, they won again. We knew they were going to. On to the next one. Like, I think we end up sort of only talking about them when they have big wins over big clubs or losses, which is probably the frustrating thing for some City fans. I'm sure there are a few of them out there. So I think we probably should give them the credit they deserve for this result. But it is also a game that we kind of all assumed was going to be City comfortably getting through.
So I certainly wouldn't say we learned anything from this match, but we maybe got a reinforcement of something in the way that City conceded in this game. So as comfortable as they were in this match, the manner of the Copenhagen goal, I think, will give Pep something to mull over. I mean, he's probably not losing any sleep over it, but nonetheless, he might have added it to a list of things to consider. It was a very clean counter-attacking goal by Copenhagen with El Yusuf finishing it off. And this is a vulnerability that we've seen with City this season. They can be got at on the counter-attack. We spoke about it last week on The Big Thing, that City are conceding a lot of fast break goals this season. 19th out of 20 Premier League teams this season for the number of fast break goals conceded, more than in any other Pep Guardiola season at Manchester City, and there's still like 3 months of the season to go, and this was another one to add to the collection. So I'd imagine if you're Real Madrid or even Bayern or whoever looking at this match, yes, City are scary, but they also have that Death Star thing that if you shoot it accurately enough, maybe the whole thing will blow up.
We agreed that Rodri is the point you have to shoot at.
Injure Rodri as well, is the other thing.
Excellent. Joe, anything to add on this one, or should we wrap it?
No, Graham's point's good. Credit to Copenhagen. That counter-attacking goal is beautiful. Like a little one-touch, little flick in the box, and I don't know, it's a really lovely goal to knife through Man City, to the point where I don't think City defended that perfectly, but it's one of those moments where you almost just have to hand it to the opposition. Unlike the goalkeeping situation for Copenhagen in this game, but yeah, this result was not a surprise. It was not City's best performance by any stretch of the imagination, but that doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't especially. All right, so Taylor, looking back at this round of 16 games and the ones we've had so far, obviously we've got a few more next week to complete the round. Do we feel like the narrative has changed at all after this week? I suppose the key from these games is that Bayern Munich
aren't dead.
They're not dead as previously advertised.
I think that's a big one. I think the other one for me at least is just that PSG are better than I expected them to be. And it's a credit to Lucho. It's a credit to him for playing some young players and getting some really great performances out of those young players and finding a way to make this team look better than just get the ball to our stars and see what happens. And I think that's probably a brush I've painted them with, certainly in the past, but probably this season as well. So for me, that result, I don't think La Real were particularly good on the day, but I think PSG were, and I think that made them look worse as a result. So I think that's one for me. I have more faith in PSG to make a run. If PSG go up against Real Madrid, let's say, I think that is a more captivating tie than I would have thought of maybe 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. I think that the biggest positive out of this week's games is that we're going to get some heavyweight ties in the quarterfinals. Yeah. The Champions League this season, it's felt like it's taken a little bit longer to find top gear than in past seasons. But we've now got, you know, Bayern, City, Real Madrid, PSG into the quarterfinals. If we look at next week's games, you'd expect Arsenal possibly to turn that around. Barcelona have the advantage over Napoli. You're going to get one of Atleti and Inter, and then possibly Dortmund. So that is a heavyweight final eight of this competition, and I am looking forward to those matches.
Indeed. Thank you very much, Graham. Thank you very much to all of you. That has been our Champions League review for the week. Taylor Rockwell, welcome back. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you all for having me back. Thank you all for making up for doing your Bayer Leverkusen and Xavi Alonso big thing when I wasn't there by doing the Manchester City big thing while I wasn't there. I do appreciate that.
Yeah, it's all about balance. By the way, big thing this coming week is all about Inter Milan, so look out for that on the feed. Graham Rutherton, thank you again, sir.
Thank you, Ryan Bailey.
Joe Lowry, pleasure as always. Keep that talent threshold high, baby.
Right back at you.
And listener, thank you for joining us once again. We'll be back on the feed very shortly with that big thing episode I just mentioned. But for now, bye.